The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. On today's bonus episode, I've compiled a few of my Trop 10 lists from last year's episodes. Today's episode is going to be the Trop 10 NFL, MLB, and NBA players of the past. You know, I love the sport of football. Out of all the sports, I love football the most. I've always loved football the most. I love the history of it. I've watched plenty of old games, old Super Bowls. I know a lot about old players. And there's just many players I've watched in the past where I'm like, damn, I wish I could have seen that player play. So I went ahead and I'm going to go name off my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play. I started with five, but it was, as I'm putting the list down, I'm like, shit, man, it's just expanding and expanding. So I went ahead and I went with the top 10 over a top five. I picked players who I personally... I love to see their game. When I watch highlights of them, I'm like, damn, that's just crazy. They played the game like that. And I also picked maybe like key guys who are like the main guy from maybe like a defense of that certain era that was great. So you pick one of the guys just to at least represent an entire defense or an entire offense or hell, even an entire team. So let's go ahead and kick it off. My top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play. Number 10 is Jack Tatum. I had to start it off with Jack Tatum. You know, I had to put Jack Tatum in my top 10. I mean, hello, he's the intro track to my whole podcast. So I had to put him on here. And I mean, really, for real, when I remember the first time I saw highlights of him, he played from 1971 to 1980, played the majority of his time with the Oakland Raiders, except for 1 year. I can't remember who he played with. I think it was the Oilers who he ended up playing with. He was a free safety. And I just remember he was a part of the 70s Oakland Raiders defense that was led by John Madden at coach. This is one of the most intense, scary defenses you will ever see. I mean, football players of today wouldn't even be able to handle it. Like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes would be shitting their fucking diapers if they had to play against the defenses of the 70s, and especially this Oakland Raiders defense, which had Jack Tatum, one of the hardest hitters you will ever fucking see. That is what he was known for. He was the assassin. That was his nickname. And he just was a killer. And if you've ever seen Ronnie Lott, Jack Tatum was Ronnie Lott before Ronnie Lott hit the league. So, man, just watching highlights of Jack Tatum, it's just intense. He won a Super Bowl. He won Super Bowl XI with John Madden as his coach. And so that's number 10 on my top 10 players of the past I wish I could have seen play. Number 9 is Walter Payton. He played from 1975 to 1987. With the Chicago Bears, he was their running back. He spent his entire career as a Chicago Bear. He's one of the greatest running backs of all time. The way he ran the ball was just something else. I don't even think anybody to this day can really even compare to what Walter Payton did on the field. He was MVP in 1977. He won Super Bowl XX with the Chicago Bears. He ended his career with 16,726 yards rushing. That at the time was the league leading rusher, and it didn't get broken until Emmitt Smith. Walter Payton, he's just one of the greatest running backs of all time. And when I watch highlights of him, I'm like, damn, that guy, there ain't nothing like him in the league today. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play, Mean Joe Greene. Played 1969 to 1981 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a defensive tackle. And he is one of the greatest defensive players of all time. Like I mentioned about Jack Tatum and that Oakland Raiders defense, you didn't want to go up against them, and you definitely didn't want to go up against his Pittsburgh Steelers defense. I mean, it was led by Mean Joe Green, but they were stacked from top to bottom. And one thing about these defenses in the 70s, they were allowed to be grimy and dirty, and they would beat the fucking shit out of you. They were just killers, and it's just so much fun to watch that kind of football played, especially on defense, because nowadays defense is so weak, and because all the rules are favored in the offense, because everybody likes offense. And I don't have a major problem with it. I do have a problem with how you can't really touch the quarterback anymore. I hate when there's a huge hit on a wide receiver that they call a flag on that. It's like, I don't know what you expect. But when you watch somebody like Mean Joe Green, that guy, he, trust me, Aaron Rodgers wouldn't know shit if he had Mean Joe Green coming at him. Mean Joe Green is a four-time Super Bowl champ with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They won Super Bowl 9, 10, 13, and 19. He was Defensive Player of the Year twice in 1972 and 1974. And he's just one of the greatest defenders of all time. He's also one of the first kind of, one of the first guys who really got, in a commercial. He was in the famous Coca-Cola commercial where he throws the kid the jersey and, he gives him a Coke. So, that's kind of, not only was he a great defender, but he kind of opened up he paved the way for athletes getting in commercials and getting sponsorships and that kind of stuff. So then number 7 on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play is Bart Starr. He played from 1956 to 1971, Green Bay Packers quarterback. He actually played in the league before it was the NFL. So technically, he's a 7-time champion. He has won 5 championships before the NFL formed. He won a championship in 1961, 62, 65, 66, and 67. He was MVP in 1966, and he won Super Bowl I and II. And one of the reasons why I wish I could have seen him is it's so cool to watch quarterbacks of old, because a lot of people today think the running quarterback just magically happened, like when Michael Vick rolled around. And that's not true. The running quarterback was actually what football used to be. And especially when Bart Starr played, he did a lot of running rather than passing. Now, he was a part of the whole revolution into mostly, because the league did used to be mostly running, and then it changed to a passing league. And so he kind of was the impetus of that with Vince Lombardi. But I mean, this team absolutely dominated. They just dominated every year. They dominated every game. And Bart Starr, I don't think, gets a lot of credit, because the majority of that Packers team is in the Hall of Fame. And so a lot of people like to credit a whole bunch of other players. And yeah, they had a lot of great players, but Bart Starr was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And he was an excellent player. And when I've seen highlights of him, I'm like, I just marvel at watching him run the ball. And he would literally take on defenders like he was a running back. And it just was fun to watch. And I wish I could have seen him watch, but I wish I could have seen him play, because he was a spectacular quarterback. And number 6 on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play is Lawrence Taylor. He played from 1981 to 1993. He was New York Giants linebacker. His career basically ended when I was kind of starting to watch football, so I don't really remember a lot of his career towards the end there. But he is by far one of the greatest football players of all time. Not just greatest defensive players, but he's just one of the greatest football players of all time. He really revolutionized the linebacker position. He really revolutionized defense. He was one of the most feared defenders that you will ever see play the game. And since Dick Butkus, really. I mean, like, he was just an absolute beast. I mean, he was so good that he was the MVP in 1986. And defensive players getting the MVP says a lot, because you have to be that fucking good to be recognized for the MVP. He's a two-time Super Bowl champ. He won with the Giants in Super Bowl 21 and 25 with Bill Parcells as his coach. He was Defensive Player of the Year in 1981, 1982, and 1986. In 1986, when he won the MVP and that Defensive Player of the Year, he also had a career high 20 and a half sacks. So Lawrence Taylor was a beast. Watching highlights of that dude, it's just insane to see what he used to do on the football field. And that's another dude where if quarterbacks of today had to see that dude coming running at him, they wouldn't know what the hell to do. Then number five on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play is Bob Lilly. He played from 1961 to 1974 with my Dallas Cowboys at defensive tackle. He was actually the first ever Dallas Cowboys pick. I call him the number one cowboy, and a lot of people call him Mr. Cowboy, but he's like number one to me because he was their first pick. He was with them when they went to their first Super Bowl, which was Super Bowl V, which they lost. And he actually has this memorable moment after they lose. He throws his helmet in the air, and he says it's one of his most embarrassing moments of all time, because I think he said like a kid walked up to him and picked up his helmet and like, why'd you do that, Mr. Lilly? And he's all like, I don't know, kid. I just lost a game. And he just felt really stupid. But then the following year, the Cowboys ended up going to the Super Bowl in Super Bowl VI and winning it. And that was the first Super Bowl for the Cowboys as well. So he basically, Bob Lilly is the number one cowboy. He is who started this gangsta shit. And that's the motherfucking thanks he gets, because he was a spectacular player too. I mean, he was just a great player. I mean, he dominated that Cowboys defense of the 60s and 70s, was extremely dominant. He was the focal point of that team. And I mean, he really was, he was everything that like a Dallas Cowboy should be. He was tough. He was hard-nosed. He was all about going to work. He didn't put up with any bullshit. He still doesn't put up with any bullshit. And he was, watching highlights of him is great. And I would have loved to see him play, because A, he played for my favorite team of all time, and it would have been cool to see what the first ever draft pick for the Dallas Cowboys did in his time. Then my number four top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play, O.J. Simpson. Played from 1969 to 1979 with the Buffalo Bills as the running back. I know the league likes to act like O.J. Simpson doesn't exist. I know we're all supposed to hate O.J. Simpson. And yes, he, as a human being, we could tell he's not that great. Whoop-dee-fucking-do. I don't give a shit about that. When I'm watching sports, I only care about what you're doing on the field. And when you watch O.J. Simpson highlights, that dude was a bad man on the field. I mean, no, the closest thing that we have to him in the league today is Derrick Henry, who's a great running back. But man, O.J. Simpson, he kind of got screwed too, because he played for the Bills. And he only ended up playing in one playoff game in his entire career, which is really sad because he was such an amazing running back. So, and it's nice to hear he doesn't really complain about that, because there are some players who think that when they play for a shitty team, they don't usually rep their team. But, you know, he actually still is a Bills fan. He still talks about the Bills all the time. You know, career highlights, other than stabbing people to death, his career highlights as a football player, he was MVP 1973. He was the rushing leader in the league four times in 1972, 1973, 1975, and 1976. In the 1973 season, when he won the MVP, he actually was the first ever player to rush for, first ever player at the running back position to rush for over 2,000 yards. He rushed for 2,003 yards total in 14 games. Now, let me tell you, that says a lot, because the league went to 16 games, I think in like the late 80s, early 90s. And now here we are, we have 17 games. So he ran for over 2,000 yards in only 14 games. That just goes to show you what an excellent running back he was. And remember, he played for a shitty team as well. He's one of only six players ever, he's the only player ever to have six games where he rushed for over 200 yards as well. So he still to this day is one of the greatest running backs of all time. And it would be interesting to know, like, if he had actually gone and played for, like, say, like he played with the Dallas Cowboys in this time. I mean, he would actually probably go down as one of the greatest running backs in NFL history. I think the reason why a lot of people forget about him, not just because of all the bullshit that's happened since the trial with Nicole Brown, and then when he went to prison for that stupid theft of merchandise or whatever the fuck it was, but all his dumb shit now, it's like, I think a lot of that and the fact that he played for the Bills really erases what an excellent running back he was, because he was. When you watch highlights of O.J. Simpson, that dude, he made running look easy. And when he was with USC, he was a national champion and a Heisman Trophy winner. He was a Hall of Fame running back, and he was an excellent running back, and I wish I could have seen him play, and I wish I could know him as a football player rather than a murderer. So number three then on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play is Jim Brown. He played from 1957 to 1965. He was with the Cleveland Browns his entire career as a running back. And he also played before the league became the NFL. So he never won a Super Bowl, but he did win a championship in 1964. He was the league MVP in 1957, 1958, and 1965, and he's the only player ever, still to this day, to average 100 yards per game as a running back. And he ended his career with 12,312 yards. At the time, that he was the leading rusher until Walter Payton ended up breaking that mark. He is one of the greatest football players of all time. If you want to say there would be like an ambassador of football, I think Jim Brown would be it. When he retired, he really only retired, not because of health, but he really retired because he could tell the Cleveland Browns weren't really going in a good direction. As a team, he didn't think they were being serious, and he was starting to get into acting, and since acting became more lucrative for him, he just ended up retiring. So if Jim Brown would have played longer, it would be interesting to see where his numbers would have ended up in the end, but he was also a spectacular running back and probably one of the greatest football players of all time. Then number two on my top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play is Dick Butkus. He played from 1965 to 1973. He was the Chicago Bears linebacker. First of all, the number one thing I love about Dick Butkus is he has the greatest name of all time. I mean, hello, Dick Butkus. I mean, when I heard his name and I was a kid, I thought it was a joke because I'm like, Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus. I mean, come on, greatest name ever. So that alone is great. But then when you see his highlights, you're like, yeah, I'm not going to be making fun of this guy because he can't step on the field today. As a matter of fact, he is one of the greatest Twitter follows of all time. He just posts random shit where he's a smartass and says fucked up shit. And one of the things he said is, if he stepped onto the field in today's game, he would get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty just by stepping onto the field. Because today's game, you know, I mentioned Jack Tatum. I mentioned Mean Joe Green. I mentioned Lawrence Taylor. Ain't none of them Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus is one of the greatest football players of all time as well. That guy, he would knock you the fuck out. And when you watch highlights of him, oh, God, it's just so much fun. And I'm just like, oh, my God, how great would that have been to see Dick Butkus play? He was the Defensive Player of the Year in 1969 and 1970. He ended his career with a total of 22 interceptions and 27 fumbles. And at the time, and I think it still actually stands as a record right now, the fumbles. So, and he's also known as one of the greatest tacklers of all time. And if you just watch the game and you watch highlights of Dick Butkus, yeah, that dude is a beast. He unfortunately never won a Super Bowl. And he didn't really have that long of a career. I mean, 8 years is actually not that long of a career, but also at the same time, I'm sure he was pretty beat up as well, because that dude used to be a killer on defense. That's for sure. And now for my number one top 10 NFL players of the past I wish I could have seen play. You know it's a Dallas Cowboy. You know it had to be a Dallas Cowboy. And that is the one and only Roger Staubach. He played from 1969 to 1979 as the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. He was actually drafted in 1964, but because he was in the Navy and at this time in this day and age, they didn't give a shit if you were in football. It was you go to war, and at the time the Vietnam War was going on, so he had to skedaddle and go do some real shit. And so the first 4 years of his career, he was in the Navy. And then he did, I think the last, I think it was the fourth year, he did, you know, go back and forth between playing in like training camp with the Cowboys, but he actually didn't start playing until 1969. When it started out as a back and forth between he and Craig Morton, Tom Landry really could never make up his mind. It's one of the weirdest storylines. I remember even when I first started watching like Dallas Cowboys history and the seasons when Roger Staubach played, it's really crazy because basically Roger Staubach's almost entire career, especially like the first 5-6 seasons, Tom Landry could not make up his mind whether he would want Roger Staubach to start a game or whether he wanted Craig Morton to start a game. And there would be games where he would start with one and then he would start with another. And then finally Staubach was like, dude, you just have to make a fucking decision. And it needs to be one of us. And so he finally ended up leaning more towards Staubach. And it's actually pretty ironic, too. The first Super Bowl that the Cowboys ended up winning was against the Broncos, and Craig Morton was the quarterback at the time. So that was kind of ironic that actually happened. It's weird that Roger Staubach had to go through that, because he is literally one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He's also similar to Bart Starr, because like I said, back in those days, running for a quarterback was actually quite common. And that's really what Roger Staubach was known for. He was called Roger the Dodger, because, you know, he would dodge defenders all the time and he would get out of the pocket and then he would make these insane throws. He and Drew Pearson are the creators of the Hail Mary. They did the first ever Hail Mary. And so that's kind of what Roger Staubach was known for. He was shifty. He knew how to get away from defenders. And also at the same time in college, he was an excellent quarterback. I mean, he played for Navy. If you don't realize, and if you're a college football fan, Navy ain't competing these days for anything other than just being a football team. But under Roger Staubach, they actually competed. They didn't get the national title, but they were in contention to be a national play in the national title. And he was a Heisman Trophy winner. So, I mean, even his college career, he was spectacular. He goes to the Cowboys, he plays spectacular. They win 2 Super Bowls with him, Super Bowl VI and Super Bowl XII. They ended up going to 4 Super Bowls, losing the 2 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And one, they barely lost. God, I can't remember his name, the receiver who dropped. In one of the Super Bowls, I think it was 13. It might have been 13. Where Roger Staubach throws the touchdown to Jackie something or other. God, I can't remember his name. But he throws to the receiver in the end zone for the Cowboys, and it hits him right in the breadbasket. And any receiver should catch this ball. He drops it in the end zone, and the Cowboys could have won that Super Bowl, and they didn't because of it. But you know, watching old highlights of Roger Staubach is just something else. I mean, he was a crazy quarterback. He had a great arm. It's just fun to watch quarterbacks like both he and Bart Starr just take on defenders like one-on-one. And they took on excellent defenders, you know, like I named off. We got Bob Lilly in there. You got Dick Butkus in there. You got Mean Joe Green in there. Jack Tatum. And even beyond, you know, the Jack Lamberts of the league at that time. There were so many great players at this time. So to see these quarterbacks really just take on defenders one-on-one and just make these insane plays at the time, it's fun to watch. And if you haven't watched any highlights of any of these guys, I really suggest that you do, because this was a spectacular time in football. Hell, even when I see old highlights of 90s games, I'm like, damn, they actually used to be able to play. And I'm not saying, dudes who play football today are pussies. Obviously, they are not. They play a hard game. They play a tough game. I have no problems with them trying to, quote, make the game safer, even though I don't really know how you can make a game safe where there's dudes literally running at each other. But okay, I'm totally fine with them trying to make it a safer game. But a lot of these rules, they are just catered to the quarterbacks. And I also get it because, the owners spend a lot of money on their quarterbacks. But the fact that, you can't even, tackle a quarterback basically these days, and when a receiver crosses over the middle and takes a really strong hit from a safety, in a legal manner too, led with the shoulder, not his head, they call it. They throw a flag, and it's just absolute bullshit, and it sucks to see that. So if you want to see some real football played, go watch the highlights of these 10 guys that I just named off. And you'll see some really excellent football. And I guarantee you dudes from today wouldn't even be able to keep up, especially with some of these defenders that are in here. But, I picked a little bit of everything here. I got a couple running backs, quarterbacks, defensive players. It was fun to look at all these highlights again. And like I said, I suggest that you go take a look at them as well because they were great players. And since I went ahead and named off some players of the past, I'm going to go ahead and end it with a quote from the great Deacon Jones, the Los Angeles Rams Hall of Fame defensive end, who actually almost made this top 10 players of the past. He just missed with Jack Tatum. I had to put Jack Tatum in over him. But Deacon Jones, first of all, the name alone it screams scary ass defensive player. He is another spectacular defensive player. I suggest you go watch highlights of this guy too. But here is a quote from Deacon Jones on Dick Butkus. Butkus was a well-conditioned animal, and every time he hit you, he tried to put you in the cemetery, not the hospital. And so I'm going to do the top 10 MLB players of the past that I wish I could have seen. And it was a difficult list to actually dwindle down as well, because there are a lot of great players of the past. I think I was able to find 10 who I just 100% wish I could have seen. So let's go ahead and start off with the top 10 MLB players of the past, starting with number 10. Number 10, Ty Cobb. He was the center fielder, most notably for the Detroit Tigers. He was with the Detroit Tigers from 1905 to 1926, and then he was with the A's from 1927 to 1928, so for just one season. But he's one of the most, one of the greatest baseball players ever, one of the first greatest baseball players ever. He was actually the first ever player ever inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He has owned... or currently owns not at least 90 MLB records throughout his entire career. He was basically he just was straight up baseball all around. He was great from the day he hit the league. Unfortunately, that didn't work out too well for him when he first hit the league, because the majority of his veteran teammates were very jealous of how good he was, and he actually had to deal with a lot of shitty-ass hazing to start his season. And so he actually credits that to being why he was such an asshole, because one of the reasons he's kind of known as an asshole is because when he would steal base, because that was really what he was known for, was stealing home, and stealing bases in general, is he would come at you, he would literally come at you with the spikes out, and he would use them as a weapon, and he was very scrappy, he was known as a brawler, and part of the reason why he thinks he was that way is because of his treatment, his rookie season. And to watch highlights of him is just crazy, because he was just such a spectacular player. A couple of the records that he has either owned or currently owns, he's got 4,665 scored runs, and RBIs, which is the highest by any player. His career batting average is a 366, which is currently a record. His career hits 4,189 was a record and was a record until 1985. Career runs 2,245 that was a record until 2001. His career games 3,035 was a record until 1974. Career at bats 11,429 was a record until 1974. Most stolen bases 892 that remained a record until 1977. And he still, to this day, owns the most stolen home, 54. That's 54 stolen home bases. That's a record. And that's just crazy because stealing home is such a... It's not something that you normally throw into the rep, especially these days. But he was just known for stealing home. And he was great at it. He was also the youngest player to compile 4,000 hits and 2,000 runs. He was AL MVP in 1911. He won the Triple Crown in 1909. He's a 12-time AL batting champion from 1907 to 1915, and then from 1907 to 1919. He was the AL home run leader in 1909, four-time AL RBI leader in 1907 through 1909 and 1911. He's the six-time AL stolen base leader. And then just something else, apparently after he had died, an old sports reporter who apparently didn't like him kind of started this rumor that that Ty Cobb was racist. It actually turns out that actually is not true at all. It turns out he was actually a huge advocate for the Negro League players at the time. And that was a big deal, especially in the early 1900s. He would actually go to their games. He was a regular attendance at their games, and he would even go and visit with the teams in their dugouts after their games were over and give them advice on how to become better baseball players. So it was very interesting to kind of see that he seemed like an asshole on the field, but he actually was a huge advocate for the Negro League players, and he had no issues if he were to play with the black guy. Obviously, it didn't happen in his time because Jackie Robinson didn't break the barrier until way after that. But to hear somebody be open about it at that time was a big deal. All right, and then so number nine on my top 10 MLB players of the past that I'd like to have seen play live, Joe DiMaggio. He played for the Yankees, of course, from 1936 to 1942. Then he came back, he had to go, fight in World War II, and then he came back in 1946 and then retired in 1951, basically just due to, injuries. He was a New York Yankees center fielder, and, he's a 13-time All-Star. He's a 9-time World Series champion. That's second most. He's only behind Yogi Berra, who I believe has 13, so... Damn, right there. He won the World Series 1936 through 1939, 1941, 1947, and then 1949 through 1951. Also to be noted, he went to 10 World Series and won 9 of them. He's a 3-time AL MVP. He won in 1939, 1941, and 1947. 2-time AL batting champion, 2-time AL home run leader, 2-time AL RBI leader, and he once held the MLB record 56-game hitting streak. And he, when you watch old highlights of him, he has one of the prettiest swings of all time. That's what he was mostly known for, was his hitting. And he was a spectacular hitter, especially for the time. So would have loved to have seen Joe DiMaggio play. Then number eight on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Juan Marichal. I had to put some Giants on here, and I do have a couple of San Francisco Giants on here. And Juan Marichal, he's one of the legendary starting pitchers for the Giants. He played for the Giants from 1960 to 1973. Then he played for Boston in 1974, and then he played for the Dodgers, boo, in 1975. His career record is 243 wins, 142 losses. He's got a career 289 ERA, and with 2,303 strikeouts. He's a 10-time All-Star. He's the NL. He was the NL wins leader in 1968, MLB ERA leader in 1969, and he pitched a no-hitter on June 15th, 1963. And also, he was a part of one of the greatest games ever pitched. That's not my quote. That's actually what it's called. The game is called the greatest game, one of the greatest games ever pitched. And it's because, let's see, it was in July 2nd of 1963, Milwaukee Braves versus San Francisco Giants. This game ended up going 16 innings. Now, when a game these days goes that long, you're lucky if you still have a bullpen left at that point. Well, not in this day. In this day, Juan Marichal and the Braves pitcher, I can't recall his name right now off the top of my head, and I didn't write his name down. But they went, Juan Marichal pitched all 16 innings. The Milwaukee Braves pitcher pitched like 15 and a third, 15, something. He went 15 innings. But both starting pitchers went the full distance. That's insane. And especially with the way Juan Marichal pitched, he was known for this high kick leg of his. People have never really used the high kick the way he does, but it was his secret weapon. And also in this game, to be noted, Hank Aaron at the time played for the Milwaukee Braves. If you don't know, Hank Aaron is one of the greatest baseball players of all time. He's known for being a home run hitter. As a matter of fact, you know, he's like the home run, he had that record for a long time as the home run king. In this game, he went 0 for 6. So Juan Marichal actually owned Hank Aaron's ass in a 16-inning marathon, which the Giants ended up winning thanks to Willie Mays. So, Juan Marichal, wish I could have seen him play. Then number 7 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, good old Babe Ruth. You got to have this dude on here. I kind of feel like if you're a baseball fan of any caliber, you will have wanted to have seen, at least seen, how Babe Ruth played. Whether, you know, because things in, from the past, they always get romanticized. And that's something I've always noticed getting older in my life. Like, you always see things, and like when somebody dies, people always romanticize them and make them seem like they were bigger than they actually were. So that's one of the reasons why I'd like to see Babe Ruth, if maybe people just like are romanticizing him. Now, when you look at his stats, obviously he was a spectacular player. He was both a pitcher and he played outfield. He was a starting pitcher when he first started out, 1914 to 1919. He was with the Boston Red Sox, who ended up trading him to the New York Yankees, and he played with the Yankees from 1920 to 1934. And he's mostly known as a Yankee because that's really where he did his damage. And that's when he took over. His nickname was the Great Bambino. And he just absolutely dominated, and he was just known for hitting home runs like crazy. And it was just cool. He did eventually stop pitching over time, but at one point he was a pitcher and a hitter at the same time, which was never commonplace. It's still not commonplace, and only Shohei Ohtani is who currently plays for the Angels right now. He's the only one doing that, and so it's crazy to think that that a great player used to do that. So yeah, he was starting pitcher mostly when he was with the Red Sox. And then outfielder with the Yankees for the most part. But basically, he owns tons of records. One of the all-time legends. He's a seven-time World Series champ, won the World Series in 1915, 1916, 1918, 1923, 1927, 1928, and 1932, AL MVP in 1923, AL batting champion in 1924, 12-time AL home run leader, 5-time AL RBI leader, and he was the AL ERA leader as a pitcher when he played for the Boston Red Sox in 1916. So Babe Ruth is a legend, just statistically. But like I said, it would be cool to have actually like seen him play and be like, wow, and just kind of know what type of a legend he was, just to see if he really was that great or if it's just romanticized baseball talk. But from what I can tell, it looks like it's pretty legit. But hey, things always get romanticized with everybody in every way, shape, and form. So then at number 6 on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I have Hank Aaron, right fielder for the Milwaukee / Atlanta Braves. He played for them from 1954 to 1974, and then he played from 1975 to 1976 for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he, like I said, straight up legend. He's known for home runs for sure. He's the home run king. He's a 25-time All-Star. Literally his entire career, every year of his career, he was voted to the All-Star game. That's nuts. He was World Series champion in 1957. He won the NL MVP in 1957. He's a three-time Gold Glove Award winner, two-time NL batting champion, four-time NL home run leader, and the four-time NL RBI leader. And a couple of records that he currently still owns. Career runs batted in, 2,297. Career total bases, 6,856. Career extra base hits, 1,477. And then he broke Babe Ruth's home run record at 755. So Hank Aaron, one of the greats of all time, and I would have absolutely have loved to have seen him play. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Jackie freaking Robinson. That's another guy I kind of feel like right up there with Babe Ruth. If you're just a baseball fan, it would have been nice to see not only him break the color barrier, but that's not what I focus on, really, for me. It's that he was a damn good baseball player. He played for the Brooklyn Dodgers from 1947 to 1956. He started at first base, but he's mostly known as a second baseman. Like I said, he broke the color barrier in baseball, but he also broke the color barrier as a baseball analyst as well. No black guy had ever been an analyst until Jackie Robinson. And he actually, there's a whole bunch of other accolades Jackie Robinson has for breaking the color barrier at the same at that time in life that kind of just seemed like that was his calling. And he really did it too. If you actually go read about him, you'll just be amazed at what a person he was. We're talking about his baseball career, and here are some more stats about how great Jackie Robinson was. He was a six-time All-Star, won a World Series in 1955, NL MVP in 1949. That was his first year, I believe. That was his third year in the league. He was the MLB Rookie of the Year, NL Batting Champion in 1949, and then he was the two-time NL Stolen Base Leader. Jackie Robinson, spectacular baseball player. Would have loved to seen him play. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB players of the past, Pete Rose. Man, this guy, if you just look at him statistically, he is just made to play baseball. Like, he owns so many records. He's won so many World Series with different teams, by the way. And he just was a great baseball player from start to finish. So he played for the Cincinnati Reds from 1963 to 1978. Then he played for the Philadelphia Phillies from 1979 to 1983. He played with the Montreal Expos in 1984. And then he rounded out his career from 1984 to 1986 with the Cincinnati Reds. And then he actually was the manager for the Cincinnati Reds from 84 to 89. And we all know how that ended, by the way, with his gambling shit. In his playing career, he basically played every position on the field. He played second base, first base, third base, outfield. Like, he basically, the only positions he didn't play were pitcher and catcher. And I wouldn't be shocked if at one point, due to injuries, he probably had to step in and play catcher or pitcher at some point. But, like, this dude was just made to play baseball. That's why it's bullshit that he's not in the Hall of Fame. I've already gone on a couple rants about the Baseball Hall of Fame and how I hate their process and how provincial they are about who they let in. We all know the reason why Pete Rose isn't in is because of the gambling that he got in trouble for as a manager. And don't get me wrong, I do think he obviously should suffer consequences. Because, you know, I went over this when the wide receiver from the Falcons, can't remember his name right now, but he's suspended for the year because he bet on NFL games, and he should be suspended for the year because you shouldn't be gambling on your team, your sport. Those are the rules, and that's literally rule number one of being in sports. But I think it's completely egregious to be keeping Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame because he is baseball. He, when you think of a baseball player, Pete Rose, I mean, if you just go look at his statistics alone, if you watch how the dude played baseball, that's what he was born to do, was to play baseball. He was a 17-time All-Star, three-time World Series champ. He won two with the Reds, one with the Phillies. He was the NL MVP in 1973, World Series MVP in 1975, NL Rookie of the Year, two-time Gold Glove Award winner, Silver Slugger Award winner, Roberto Clemente Award winner, and three-time NL batting champion. Some of the records he still currently holds: career hits, 4,256, career singles, 3,215, career games played, 3,562, career at-bats, 14,053, and career plate appearances, 15,890. So, you know, Pete Rose, when you watch highlights of him, he must have been so much fun to have seen play live, and I that's why he had to 100% be in my top five. As a matter of fact, my top five was actually really difficult for me to dwindle down. The whole top 10 really was kind of difficult just because all of these guys, especially when I went back and watched some of their highlights, I'm just like, man, it's just crazy to think that, like, that's how the game was back then. Like, especially, like I said, with, like, Joe DiMaggio and his swing, how beautiful his swing was. But then you look at it, and in today's game, I've mentioned before, I love Shohei Ohtani's swing. He's got a beautiful swing, and it really actually reminds me of Joe DiMaggio, who played in fucking 1936. So it's crazy that the game is basically still the same 100-plus years later. So at number three on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I have Willie Mays. Played for my San Francisco Giants. Actually, he played for the Giants when they were in New York as well. So he played for the Giants from 1951 to 1952. Then he had to go, I think it was the Korean War at the time, so he had to go serve in the military at that point. Came back and played baseball in 1954 to 1972. And then he played 1972 to 1973 with the New York Mets. He was a center fielder, and he's basically one of the greatest baseball players of all time. He's just another dude who owns a whole bunch of records. He's a 24-time All-Star. He's a World Series champion in 1954, two-time NL MVP, NL Rookie of the Year, 12-time Gold Glove Award winner. I mean, he has one of the most iconic catches of all time, where he's running towards the running out in the outfield, and the ball is coming at him backwards, and he just catches the ball right over his shoulder. So that's not shocking. He's a 12-time Gold Glove Award winner. He's won the Roberto Clemente Award. He's been an NL batting champion, four-time NL home run leader, four-time NL stolen base leader. And he hit four home runs in one game on April 30th, 1961. So, you know, Willie Mays, he's just overall, because not only was he great as a hitter, but he is known just as much for what he did defensively as a hitter. And that's kind of rare, because usually you're mostly known for one or the other, and he was just an all-around great baseball player. Would have loved to have seen Willie Mays play baseball. Then number two on my top 10 NBA players of the past, the guy who is the reason why I started this list, and that is Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson played for the Kansas City / Oakland A's from 1967 to 1975, and he went and played for Baltimore in 1976. Then he played for the New York Yankees from 1977 to 1981, played for the Angels from 1982 to 1986, and rounded out his career in 1987 as an Oakland A. He was a right fielder. He was known as Mr. October. That's what he's mostly known for, is how he would step it up come playoff time. Here's a little bit of his accolades. Other than that, he was a 14-time All-Star, five-time World Series champion. Now, he won World Series from 1972, 1973, and 1974. He won those with the A's, and then 77 and 78, he won those with the Yankees. So he's won with two separate teams, too. That dude, there's just nothing bad, in my opinion, you could say about Reggie Jackson and the way he played baseball. He was the AL MVP in 1973, two-time World Series MVP in 73 and 77, two-time Silver Slugger Award winner, four-time AL home run leader, and the AL RBI leader. So Reggie Jackson. And just when you watch highlights of him, he was such an exciting player to see. He was such a game changer, too. There's so many games in the postseason. That's why he's known as Mr. October, because he would come up to bat and he would change the trajectory of the game. Just kind of like the Yankees just did right now. They just tied shit up. It's 3-3 in the bottom of the fourth. Yankees just tied that up. So that's what I'm talking about, man. Baseball, always fun to watch. At least in my opinion. But that is what Reggie Jackson would do. He was a game changer. He would come up to bat and he would change the game with just one swing of the bat. Reggie Jackson, great baseball player. And so number one on my top 10 MLB players of the past, I wish I could have seen. Now, this guy right here, I only got to see like the last 2 years of his career because he retired in 1993. So I had to put him on here because I did like those last couple of years that I did see. But number one on my list is one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and his name is Nolan Ryan. First of all, the name alone screams I'm a baseball player. That's all I got to say about that. But he was he pitched for the New York Mets from 1966 to 1971. He pitched for the Angels from 1972 to 1979. He pitched for the Houston Astros from 1980 to 1988, and then the Texas Rangers from 1989 to 1993. One of the things he was known for is his 100-mile-per-hour fastball, and he maintained that velocity throughout his entire career, which is absolutely nuts, especially at the time he played, because these days pitchers barely make it past like 4, 5, 6 innings. If they're in there for 6 innings, like that's a long-ass time for a starting pitcher to be in. Well, not with Nolan Ryan. That motherfucker, he was just great. Not only as a pitcher, but he was not a little bitch either. There are so many fights you could see that he got in. That was actually what I loved most about him as a kid. Because that I saw a couple of the fights that he got in when he played for the Rangers, and I was like, that's the dude. I like that guy. But other than that, you know, he's an 8-time All-Star. He won a World Series in 1969, 2-time NL ERA leader, 11-time strikeout leader, and some MLB records he still holds to this day. Career strikeouts, 5,714, and 7 career no-hitters, which to this day, nobody has done. And that's just the thing about him. Like, he was just one of the greatest pitchers of all time. When you watch highlights of him, you're just blown away, especially me. And it's crazy to think because he never won a Cy Young. He never won an MVP. But I mean, when you sit back and look at greatest pitchers of all time, you have to put Nolan Ryan in there. And he's just number one on my list. I wish I could have seen more than like 2 years of his career, because in 93, I was in like third grade. So even what I know of the couple of years of his career I saw, it's not like at the forefront of my brain, you know. It's not like when I watched like Derek Jeter's entire career. I remember like everything about it. Or Barry Bonds too, you know, like I remember everything about Barry Bonds' career. I remember when he broke the record, when he broke Willie Mays' home run record. I remember that day vividly. So Nolan Ryan's career, I don't remember vividly, but man, if I could have seen anybody play, I would have loved to see Nolan Ryan pitch. Just the way he pitched, and to see somebody maintain 100-mile-per-hour velocity, I actually wouldn't be shocked if the old guy could still pitch 100-mile-per-hour fastball to this day. That's my list of MLB, top 10 MLB players of the past I wish I could have seen. Like I said, it was a tough list to dwindle down because there was even more than 10, but I didn't want to put too many in because that's a lot of research, and I mean, you probably get lost after a while. But just to break it down, number 10 was Ty Cobb, number 9, Joe DiMaggio, number 8, Juan Marichal, number 7, Babe Ruth, number 6, Hank Aaron, number 5, Jackie Robinson, number 4, Pete Rose, number 3, Willie Mays, number 2, Reggie Jackson, and number 1, Nolan Ryan. So, that's a great list of old players from the past who I wish I could have seen play. Like, today would be a great opportunity to do my top 10 NBA players of the past that I wish I could have seen. So there are going to be 10 players throughout the history of the NBA who played before I was born, or their career was basically ending when I was like really young, and I didn't get to see most of their career. So let's go ahead and start it off with number 10, Kevin McHale, power forward of the Boston Celtics from 1980 to 1993. He's known as one of the greatest power forwards of all time. He was very scrappy, but he could, and he was great on defense. But the thing about him is not only was he great on defense, but he could shoot too. He won three titles with the Boston Celtics in 1981, 1984, 1986. He was a seven-time All-Star, three-time All-Defensive First Team, three-time All-Defensive Second Team, and he was the two-time Sixth Man of the Year. Basically, he came off the bench at the beginning of his career and would fill in for Larry Bird, but then when they became their championship-level team, he actually was a starter for the most part, but he definitely, when I look at highlights of him, I'm like, man, he was such a pure shooter, but his defense was just top notch. And then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I have Oscar Robertson. He was a point guard for the Cincinnati Royals from 1960 to 1970, who eventually moved to Sacramento and became the Sacramento Kings. And then he played for the Milwaukee Bucks from 1970 to 1974. He's basically known as one of the greatest all-around basketball players to ever play the game. He was a great scorer. He was a great shooter. He was a great passer. He was a great rebounder. One thing he's really known for were the triple-doubles that he just would get on the regular. You know, a lot of people look at Russell Westbrook, years ago, not currently, but years ago, the triple-double used to basically be his normal thing. And he was actually the second player to ever average a triple-double for a season. And the first being Oscar Robertson, who did that. He was the first to average a triple-double in the 1962 season. So his career highlights are he won a championship with the Bucks in 1971. He was the MVP, league MVP in 1964. He's a 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team. He was the Rookie of the Year, 6-time assist leader. He's on all of the anniversary teams, the 35th anniversary, 50th, and 75th. And like I said, he was the first to average triple-double for an entire season in 1962. So he's just one of the most prolific shooters and just all-around basketball players to ever play the game. And so he's at number 9. At number 8 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Jerry West, the point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1960 to 1974. He won a championship in 1972. He was the finals MVP in 1969. He's a 14-time All-Star, 10-time first team, 4-time All-Defense. He was the scoring champ in 1970. He was the assist leader in 1972. And he's also one of those players who's on every single NBA anniversary team. He's just known as one of the greatest point guards of all time. Just not only because he could score a lot, but I mean, you look at that, he was a 4-time all defensive team. So that says a lot, just what a prolific player he was. And he is the logo of the league. So, you're the logo for a reason. So Jerry West is number 8. At number 7 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Larry Bird. He played forward for the Boston Celtics, from 1979 to 1992. He was a 3-time champion, right up there with Kevin McHale in 81, 84, and 86. He was a 2-time finals MVP. He was a 3-time league MVP in 1984, 85, and 86. He was a 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team player, and Rookie of the Year in 1980. He's just one of the all-around great players. One of the awesome things that I wish I could have seen about him is he was very cocky on the floor, and he was such a dick at many times. And there would be certain points of the game where he would literally tell you what the play is going to be and where he's going to shoot the ball from. And he would look you in the face and say, yeah, I'm going to catch the ball right here. I'm going to shoot it and I'm going to make it. And he would do it. And he did it right in front of them. And just to see somebody as brash as that is just, it's something I enjoy. It's something I've always loved to see. And I think it would have been fun to have been around during those Boston Celtics Lakers days in the 80s when they were just going back and forth against each other because they were two great teams with some excellent Hall of Fame players. And so Larry Bird is number 7 on my top 10 NBA players of the past. At number six on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish you could have seen Isaiah Thomas, point guard for the Detroit Pistons in 1981 through 1994. He won two championships, one in 89 and 1990. He was a 12-time All-Star, three-time first team. He was the assist leader in 1985. And just one of the reasons why I wish I could have seen him is because this Detroit Pistons team, they were known as the Bad Boys. And the reason why is because they were dirty as hell. They played amazing defense, and they would just wear you out. This team was Michael Jordan's thorn in his side for the first couple of his seasons. Like when Jordan finally got over this team, over the hump, and beat them in the playoffs, it was a big deal because this team was so dominating. And they didn't just dominate Jordan, man. Like, they dominated the Lakers, the Showtime Lakers. Like, this team, they were known for defense. But Isaiah Thomas, he was the driving force in this team. And while I put him on the top 10 NBA players of the past, just this team in general, I would have loved to have watched, even though they gave it to my Lakers. But they were just such an amazing team, such a crazy team. And I don't know if a team like that could still exist in today's soft-ass NBA. And at number five on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Wilt Chamberlain. He played center in the league for, first he started with the Harlem Globetrotters in, from 58 to 59. Then he played for the Golden State Warriors from 1959 to 1965. Then he played for the 76ers from 1965 to 1968. And then he ended out his career with the Los Angeles Lakers from 1968 to 1973. He is the only NBA player ever of all time to score 100 points. Unfortunately, when he scored the 100 points, basketball wasn't filmed. They really only have like a couple highlights of the actual game, and really the only shot we have of him is in the locker room after the game, where he's just holding up a piece of paper that says 100 on it, because that was really the only way they could signify that it actually happened. And so it would have been crazy. I mean, it was awesome to see Kobe score 81 points. That's the closest we've ever come to Wilt Chamberlain doing that. But it would have been crazy to see somebody score 100 points, especially a center, because he was just so dominant. I mean, this is how dominating he was. He averaged 40 and 50 points in a couple of seasons over the span of his career. 40 or 50 points. That is astronomical. His career average is 30 points and 20 rebounds. So not only did he score a whole lot of points, but he was going to get you on the rebounds. And he was just a phenomenal player. He's a two-time champion. He won with the 76ers in 1967, and then he won one with the Lakers in 1972. He was the finals MVP in 1972. He was a four-time league MVP, 13-time All-Star, seven-time first team, rookie of the year, seven-time scoring champion, 11-time rebound champion, and one-time assist champion. So he covers all bases, one of the greatest all-around basketball players ever, and he played center. And it's just crazy to think what he did in his career. He's just one of the greatest amazing basketball players of all time, Wilt Chamberlain, at number five on my list. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Julius Erving, also known as Dr. J. He was a forward for the Philadelphia 76ers 1976 to 1987. He won a championship with them in 1983. He was the MVP of the league in 1981. He was an 11-time All-Star, five-time All-NBA first team. But also the thing about Dr. J is he actually played before it was the NBA, when it was the ABA. And so he won two championships in the ABA. And then he was also a three-time ABA MVP. So he dominated his entire career from start to finish. And what the number one thing Dr. J is known for are his slam dunks. He basically invented the slam dunk, like making it like what the slam dunk contest is today. You got to thank Dr. J for all of that. And that's one of the main reasons why I wish I could have seen him play, is not only his sheer and utter dominance, but just, the dunks at the time. They were just, it wasn't anything that anybody had seen at that time. So it would have been really cool to be around when Dr. J was playing. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen, Bill Russell, center for the Boston Celtics from 1956 to 1969. Literally one of the most winningest players of all time. He won 11 championships as a player, but he also won two as a coach. So he has 13 championships total as a Boston Celtic. He's a five-time league MVP, 12-time All-Star, and a four-time rebound leader. And he's just like basically the godfather of basketball. He's like the Babe Ruth of basketball. When you think of basketball, this is basically where it started. Him and Wilt Chamberlain. But Bill Russell, nobody dominated like Bill Russell. And he just was such a spectacular player. But it's also very sad to kind of read about what it was like for him being a black man playing for the Boston Celtics at the time. I mean, obviously, racism was huge at this current point in time. 1956 through 1969, nobody really gave a shit about black people at that current point in time. Even if you were one of the greatest basketball players and you were winning championships, one horrible story. They actually highlighted it on the show Winning Time. The HBO Max show about the Lakers Showtime era then. And they actually highlighted this, and I did fact check it to make sure it wasn't some over-exaggerated thing. But basically, it was kind of towards the end of his career. It might have even been when he was a coach. But some scum lords broke into his house and just vandalized the interior of his house. They graffitied it up with a bunch of racial slurs. They broke all of his trophies, all his achievements. And then they took a shit on his bed. Like, what vile piece of shit human beings. And when I read that, I was like, any dude who can, like, still go to work every day and still dominate. I mean, like, you got to really put it into perspective. He was like the LeBron James of now. You can't really see any Lakers fan or any Cavaliers fan or Heat fan, anybody who's a real legit LeBron James fan doing that to him. Maybe somebody who hates him. Yeah, you totally. But these were Boston Celtics fans who did that to Bill Russell. That's what's most, I mean, the whole act is vile. But the fact that they didn't even regard him as a human being and he did all of that for them and their enjoyment and their pleasure. It's just amazing to me that Bill Russell was able to put up with that actual load of bullshit and, you know, just still play, still coach, still stay there. And then in between when he retired and then as recently, I want to say it was might have been about 15-ish years ago, his time with the Celtics, it did not end well. He did not speak with them. They did not speak with him. As a matter of fact, he did not even get a statue in front of the Celtics arena until a few years ago. Like, I want to say it was as recently as 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It was recent. And when you hear that, to me, that's just amazing because, you know, there's, as a Lakers fan, we have tons of statues all around our building. And I mean, you got Shaq, we got Kobe, we got Magic, we got Kareem, we got every one of our dudes and we highlight all of them. And you would think that Boston would highlight Bill Russell immediately. And part of the reason why they didn't is just because both parties, it ended horribly. And it's good to see that they're finally giving him his dues because for everything he did for that team, he did it with grace and with what he put up with. Not a lot of people would be able to continue to be as great as he was. So not only did I want to see Bill Russell as an amazing basketball player then, but you got to give it up to the dude for putting up with that kind of shit at that time. All right, and then at number two on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen. Now, one and two, they're basically one, because I would have loved to seen both of these. If you notice, not many Lakers appeared at the bottom except for Jerry West. So these last two, they are Lakers, who I wish I could have seen. And like I said, they're simultaneous. You could switch either one at one and two, but I went ahead and put Magic Johnson at number two. Point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1979 to 1991, and then he also played the 1996 season. Five-time NBA champion, three-time league MVP, 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team All-NBA, 4-time assist leader, 2-time steal leader. He was just one of the greatest basketball players of all time. when he hit the league, he was something different. That no point guard was as tall as he was. No point guard could work the floor like he did. And he was just something else. That's why they called him Magic, because that's what he looked like on the court. And he just totally changed the face of the Lakers. I would say to this day, if you ever were to say who is the face of the Lakers organization just in general, you would have to put Magic at number one. Not just because of the championships, but I mean, he's easily one of the most recognizable Lakers. And he just loved being a Laker, and he still loves being a Laker, even though he is no longer, he's not a coach. He's not an owner anymore, but he still is a Laker for life. And, so definitely Magic Johnson at number two, but then at number one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And the only reason why I put him at number one is because, in my personal opinion, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest basketball player of all time. I know everybody likes to talk about Jordan and LeBron, and I think part of the reason why, because Kareem almost never gets mentioned. And I remember the first time I started kind of doing research on the past players, not right now, but like just randomly when I've looked at players of the past and what they've done, it was very telling to me when I looked at Kareem's stats. I mean, he owns like every stat. He's the all-time leading scorer still right now, even though LeBron's probably going to break that next year. But he's held the all-time leading scorer since his retirement. He's just absolutely dominated the league. He not only did he dominate the NBA, but he dominated college basketball as well. He was an excellent high school basketball player. So just like Kareem is one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And it's always blown my mind that nobody will ever put him up there, even though, and I think the reason why is because he was more quiet and not as boisterous as a Michael Jordan or a LeBron or a Kobe Bryant or whoever else we're talking about when we're having that discussion. But to me, Kareem is the greatest basketball player of all time. And I think also another reason why he gets lost in the fray in that discussion is because of the time period he played in. Same with Bill Russell, because it's egregious to me that he's never discussed when you're talking about the greatest NBA players of all time. But Kareem, he played center for the Milwaukee Bucks from 1969 to 1975, and then he played for the Lakers from 1975 to 1989. He's a six-time NBA champion. He won one with the Bucks and five with the Lakers. He's a six-time league MVP, 19-time All-Star, 10-time All-First Team, Rookie of the Year, two-time scoring champion, one-time rebound champion, four-time blocks champion, and he also won three championships with UCLA in his college time. So, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, he's got the skyhook. He was just so dominating. And it would have been fun to see both him and Magic on the court. I think anybody who got to see not only those two, but then also the Boston Celtics that I mentioned in those 80s, you know, Larry Bird and Kevin McHale, it would have been great to see those two teams go at it with each other. So I've got Kareem at number one, but it could have been either Magic or Kareem. So my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen 10, Kevin McHale, number 9, Oscar Robertson, 8, Jerry West, 7, Larry Bird, 6, Isaiah Thomas, 5, Wilt Chamberlain, 4, Julius Erving, Dr. J, number 3, Bill Russell, 2, Magic Johnson, and 1, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.